started, we have a long, long one here. That's what we was waiting on. It wouldn't load. We was trying to get it to load. So, and it's not because of its length. It's there's so many pictures that we put in. And if you take some time to look at it, you've seen all the different pictures you have to look up and put in. It takes a long time to load those. So anyway, we're going to get started. How many enjoying these Torah portions? Torah portion number 12. Vahi. Everybody say, Vahi. And it's that back of the throat, he. Vahi. It's Hebrew for and he lived. And he lived. So the Torah is going to be out of Genesis 47, starting with verse 28 through 50, 26. So this is our last Torah portion in the book of Genesis. And so it's been an absolute thrill to go through these ones in Genesis. The half Torah is in 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 1 through 12. So we have a lot to cover today. Topics in the portion, this week's Torah portion, Vahi, Hebrew for and he lived. Chapter 48, Yosef takes his sons to be blessed by Yaakov before his death. The firstborn blessing will come out. But Yaakov's, think about it, Joseph's sons, he don't have the firstborn. The firstborn is Reuben. But we notice that the firstborn blessing is given to Ephraim. And we'll look at that, how important that was. And in chapter 49, Yaakov blesses his 12 sons. So he gives a blessing for all 12 of them. We'll see how that blessing, the words, we'll take just the words that come out of his mouth and how true they still stand today. That's how you can tell when God gives a word to somebody and what's the evidence of that happening. So how many's ever had a word from the Lord given to you? There's two things that either happen. You pursued it or you didn't pursue it. And if you didn't pursue it, don't look for the things to happen. But if you pursued it, those things, those words should be manifesting themselves. That's how you can tell it was a word from the Lord. Not every word is from the Lord. But if it's from the Lord, you'll be able to tell. You'll see those things in your life, and you should always be looking for them. If you're not looking for them, how you expect when God gives a word for these hints for you to look for that and you don't look for it? That'd be terrible. It means you don't trust him. So you take him at his word and look for those things. And literally, me and my wife, we're living out right now. As we sit here, we're living out the prophetic word in our life. And we saw the hand of God bring it to pass. That, to me, is encouraging because I know the Lord, if he tells me he's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 steps ahead of me for the rest of my life, I'm going to trust that and I'm going to believe that and I'm going to expect that. Because he said it, I should expect it. In chapter 50, Yaakov's death at 147 and his burial procession back to the land of Israel, Yosef lived another 53 years and he died at 110. So we'll look at some of those things, not tonight, but tomorrow. Hopefully we'll get to chapter 50. So in the Porsche, in the parties, rather, we see that there's some things that we'll look at the plain meaning, Yaakov's life, blessing, death, and return. And the return is back to the land of Canaan. And we'll look at that, how that unfolds. God's character, only life is blessing. This is very important because remember we see the character of God in the Remez, we see God's character always shows out. And we see only life and blessing. That's his character, life and blessing. How many know God wants life and blessing for us? If we obey, what do you get? Life and blessing. If you disobey, death and cursing. It's simple choice. You disobey, that's what's coming. Don't expect nothing else. The hidden glimpse of the Messiah in Genesis 49, verse 10, we see the scepter and the shepherd. We'll look at that verse. It's very important. And the application for us today speaks life and blessings only. So we'll look at that and how that's fulfilled in our life. And then there's some enlarged letters and anomalies Genesis 49:12, we'll see that het, the het sound, the het. We'll look at that as in the word red. It also can mean flashing, depending on who was looking at it. There's two different looks at it. John saw it as his eyes were flaming in fire. But we see here it was seen as red when he gives the, he said, this is how your eyes will be. Red like the wine. And so we'll look at that. And so we'll see some of these things. Again, this is going to be way down, so I'll cover this again when we get to those parts, because we'll forget what we talked about today. So the Parsha tells of Jacob's request for burial in Canaan, Jacob's blessings of Joseph's sons Ephraim and Manasseh, Jacob's blessing of his sons, Jacob's death and burial, and Joseph's death. We'll learn symbolism of the different tribes from Jacob's blessing and how it prophetically hints at their futures. Very important. We're going to see that God already, imagine what was in the mind of Jacob. Think about the stuff he carried. 14 years he studied under Melchizedek, Shem, and he had, his mind was so full of the words of Yah that Yah didn't let him say everything, but he said what was needed to be said, but he was so full of it. And this is considered a closed Porsche. So, and the reason, because it hints at how he closed his mouth. He only let him say what needed to be said at the moment, but he had all this inside of him, and he operated in a supernatural way, Jacob. It's supernatural what happened to him. That's why he had 17 years of his best life was when he went back to Egypt. So he 17 years, he had Joseph, and then he lost him, so it was a bad experience for him. And then at the end of his life, he had 17 years with him, and it was the best experience he'd ever had. And that's how good God is. As Vahi opens, the focus shifts immediately to the patriarch Jacob. And Jacob lived. Vahi. He lived. Say it. Vahi. Remember we talked about just keep practicing. We don't say it exactly right, but you keep practicing, you're going to get it. It's going to come to you. Listen to it and practice. As you go over these portions, just practice them. 17 years in the land of Egypt, he lived. In the days of Jacob, the years of his life were 7 years and 40 years and 100 years. Verse 28. So it tells it that away. These are all significant times at different things. They all have a meaning to it. That's why it's broke down. 7, 40, and 100. And that's just a side study if you want to take that on. The double portion of Yosef in Genesis 47, 28 through 50, 26. In the prophets, 1 Kings 2, 1 through 12. Jacob became ill and Yosef was sent for a second time to bless Manasseh and Ephraim. The normal procedure for blessing the children was to first call the eldest, as in the case of Yitzhak, Isaac, and Esau. Jacob's eldest was Reuben, followed by Simeon. Jacob was not following tradition, but exercising his authority as led by the Spirit. Remember, he was supernaturally moved to do what he did, because his eyes were already dim, so he couldn't really see. So he supernaturally moved to give the blessing out. And this is why we say he's led by the Spirit of Yah. In Melchizedek order of priesthood, which he carried, and that's what he carried that same order, and we see that same order is what Yeshua actually carried, not just in one way, but in two ways. We'll see it in this portion. Normally, the firstborn son would receive a double portion of the inheritance, but by counting Manasseh and Ephraim equal with his other children and giving Yosef a portion as well, Yosef's portion was three times that of the other sons. Jacob adopted Manasseh and Ephraim, so they that day became his own sons, with the same rights as Reuben and Shimeon, who they replaced. Here Yaakov's family formally adopts his grandsons by Yosef according to the legal procedure and customs of the day, which was first a formal pronouncement. So he pronounces it, and then he does what? He says, bring them and put them between my knees. What did that represent? It represented that as if I birthed them myself. Because that's what, when Sarah gave her concubine, her servant girl, to Abraham, when she bore Ishmael, she sat on Sarah's knees to give birth. Because she would have this child through her concubine. That was the custom. And the same thing is being played out here with Yaakov. The placement of the adoptees between the knees of the one who is to adopt them, which Yosef does for him in 48:12, is part of the formal procedure of the day. The last part of the procedure was to pronounce the pronouncement of the inheritance. Because now if he's going to adopt them, then they got to be a part of the inheritance. And that inheritance is going to be spoken, and we'll see how valuable that is today and how it plays out for all of us today. Archaeology helps us to understand this custom. Finds in Myra and Nuzi in Mesopotamia indicates that the firstborn could be bypassed and the birthright given to a younger son if the father so desires. The right of the firstborn was very important, being a carryover of the priesthood rights passed down through Adam. And the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia says, the right belonging naturally to the firstborn son, whether the offspring of a legal wife or a concubine, such as a person, ultimately became the head of the family, the line being continued through him. As firstborn, he inherits a double portion of the whole estate. That's volume 1, page 515. This is the first recorded instance of hands being laid upon the head in imparting blessings. So to think about hands being laid on him, he's imparting blessings. Very, very valuable for us to understand, and we'll see. Because in the case of Isaac and Ishmael, God said to Abram, take your son, your only son, Isaac, and offer him to me. So there was a separation by God from Ishmael, even though Ishmael was his firstborn son. There was a separation because the promise was made through Sarah. Remember, and Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed. All that had to come together, the impatience led to Ishmael, and hence the division that's in our world today. The birthright of double inheritance was given to Yosef, and through him to Ephraim, according to 1 Chronicles 5, 1 and 2, a firstborn is given three things. A double inheritance, which was given to Yosef's tribe, the priesthood, which was given to Levi's tribe, and the right to rule, which was given by Judah's tribe. So we see that. These three things were given. The prophecy given to Ephraim are astounding in light of world history. Yaakov crossed his hands while doing the blessing. The significance is that the right hand transfers the greater blessing. That's why Yeshua is at the right hand of the majesty on high, because it transfers the greater blessing. Yaakov's right hand went to Ephraim's head, giving the greater blessing. To the youngest, Yosef complained, and his father refused and said, I know it, my son, I know it. In other words, he's just saying, I know what I'm doing, because he did like this. Because Yosef positioned the boys correctly, and Yaakov couldn't even see him. But by the Spirit of God, he did this. And that's powerful. That just that alone is a powerful testament of him being led by the Spirit of the Lord. He also shall become a people, and I and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. A multitude, melogohim, a multitude of nations. The Hebrew text is melohagoim, the fullness of the nations. It's going to be, that's why the word is used, complete. In some of these translations, it's completeness of the nations. Because it's everything, you'll see all the nations all over the world that's tied directly to Ephraim. This seems to indicate that they will enter other nations and virtually take them over. Yosef's two sons represent Messiah, Yeshua, spiritual son, who would be born among the Gentiles during the 2,000 years of the Messianic age. Counting from the resurrection until today, Yosef's sons were born among the Gentiles of a non-Jewish mother. Yaakov promises Yosef the area of Shechem, which is the general area that became known as Samaria. And this is where Yosef chose to be buried in his allotted messianic inheritance in the land. Moreover, I have given to you one portion above your brothers, which I took out of the hand of the Amorites with my sword and with my bow. In the Hebrew word that is translated portion is Shechem. Now, what happened at Shechem? How many remember in our portions past? What happened at Shechem? Remember what happened in Shechem? What happened to Dinah? See, some things happened, and so there's the portion is just trying to tie us back to that place that Yosef, again, is tied to. It's referring to the land that Yaakov brought across from the city of Shechem, and see Genesis 33:19, as well as in the city itself, which was taken by Shimeon and Levi in Genesis 34. That place was given to Yosef. Joshua 24:32, as it is written in John 4:5-6. According to the book of Jasher, Yaakov gave Yosef in Genesis 48:22 the sapphire staff, which had passed down from generation to generation since Adam. It could possibly be that Yaakov would have leaned over his staff and worshipped in Genesis 48:22, because it says he leaned over his staff. Now he's up in age, but he still has the staff and he leans over it. And so keep that in mind. It's that sapphire staff that's been handed down from Adam. Again, that's in the book of Jasher. Chapter 49 contains a significant prophecy for each one of the 12 tribes. Yaakov called his children and told them he would tell them the Asher Yikra, the call of the descendants of the tribe of Israel in the end of days. The scepter given to Judah. Yaakov gave to Judah the scepter to rule over the tribes until Shiloh comes. How many know what Shiloh is? What is it a reference to? Shiloh. It's a reference to the Messiah. Until Shiloh comes. He's talking about the Messiah. So Judah is going to rule until Shiloh comes. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Who does the people gather to? Yeshua. So we see that. And it's just a wonderful painted picture. It's painted. And you got one thing about the Torah, it's beautiful. The strokes of the brush, it's so beautiful. Everything's in position. And you got to fall in love with it. In order to, you got to show a passion for it in order to receive. So you can hear what I'm saying tonight, but you're not going to receive it deep down inside unless you show a passion for the Torah and you want it to bring life-changing things to you. Measures in your life that's life-changing. That's what happens. Shiloh has been traditionally looked upon as Messiah because we or looking for the one to whom tribute is due, but this also pertains to Judah's authority to preserve and teach Torah to the other tribes who would depart from it while in exile, but in the end of the age repent and return to it. On another note, if Shiloh has not yet come, as some believe, then where is the king of the tribe of Judah today? When did the last king of Israel or from Judah reign? If we know when the last king of the house of David reigned over Israel, then we will also know when Shiloh came. Josephus, from Josephus' complete works, writes that King Herod, son of Antipater, was run out of Israel, returned to power by Caesar, and then impeached by the Jews. According to the Rebbe Baker Hillel at UT, he was just a puppet of Rome, so he is not even counted as a king by the Jewish historian. This is supported by writings of Josephus as well. Nothing was done by Herod without Caesar's approval. Even in his will, Herod made instructions that Caesar would approve the time of the reading of his will. Herod resigned at the time of Yeshua was born. Herod's son was also named Herod. Isn't even counted by Josephus as to have reigned in Israel, but there was a living legitimate heir to the throne until 40 years after Yeshua was crucified. Even the chief priest at Yeshua's trial before Pilate agreed, in John 19:15, Pilate said unto them, "Shall I execute your king?" The chief priest answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Notice those strong words. We have no king but Caesar. With the temple going up in flames, all the official genealogical records also were burnt, and so there could no longer be a legitimate heir. I think it should say heir to the throne after that. The last king had reigned. Therefore, the last king of Israel who reigned on the throne of David had to have herald the Messiah or Shiloh. According to God's word, when he had have come about the time of Herod, Israel's last king. The Jewish rabbis interpret Shiloh as Messiah both in the Targum and the Aramaic translations of Scripture from the Second Temple period. The Talmud and the Septuagint translate this passage as a reference to Messiah. In the Midrash of Bereshit Rebbe, 98.7, Rishai says, verse 10 means until King Messiah comes, who will be the kingdom. And so you can see how they translate this. The rest of the Torah portion deals with the death burial of Yaakov and his son Yosef. In Genesis 47:28, we are told that Yaakov lived 147 years. Yosef lived 110 years. Yaakov's death, "Trust in Yah with all your heart, lean not to your own understanding, in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your path." Proverbs 3:5-6. Yaakov had a difficult life with many trials and heart-rending events, yet through it all, he triumphed. At Peniel, he came to a place of victory and began to reign in life. It didn't change his circumstance, but it did change how he dealt with them. And the time approached for Israel to die, and he was prepared for it, 47:29, to be gathered to his people. This expression is in a passive sense, knowing he who controlled his life and rested in his perfect will. He makes the arrangements for his burial site with his forefathers as partakers with them of the same promise of the resurrection to come in the land of Israel. Remember what it says, all these died in Hebrews. All these died not receiving the promise. But will they receive the promise? Absolutely. That promise is still yet to come. So important is it that he makes Joseph promise to bury him there and consecrate a formal oath to him. In 47, 29 to 31, whereas Joseph waits for the nation to return to the land to take his own body there, burying him in Canaan is not left subject to the love and loyalty Joseph had toward his father, but was made a binding oath before the Almighty. That's why when he went to Pharaoh and he explained to Pharaoh, you had this world's largest funeral procession. No expenses was held back. They gave everything they could, and they took the great man of God to his burial site. It was, must have been, what a sight that must have been. This did not imply a lack of trust in Joseph. Rather, Yaakov made a realistic assessment of the political problems that would arise when Joseph sought permission for the burial outside of Egypt. Yaakov wisely knew that Pharaoh may resist Joseph's carrying out of his request, but by making it a legal agreement, he put the matter on a different basis, as seen by Pharaoh's response. Go up and bury your father as he did adjure you. Yaakov thus took the matter out of Joseph's hand and made a legal issue out of it that Pharaoh would honor. Yah had allowed Yaakov to live to see the outworking of the prophetic calling upon his life in his posterity. Under his oversight and foundations of the nations were laid in his 12 sons throughout. Through his guidance, they overcame their fleshly traits and came to maturity. Even Reuben and Simeon came to a change of heart. Yaakov is embalmed for burial to preserve his body because of the journey that must be undertaken to Canaan, and not to comply with the Egyptian custom. Embalming was not a Jewish custom. There was to allow the natural process of decay, dust to dust. Joseph is 56 years old when his father dies, and they had enjoyed 34 years together by that time, within 17 years, there was a major population explosion from the 70 souls to several thousand. Yaakov enjoyed his latter years in Egypt in the harmony and tranquility that he had longed for with all his family, and passed on in peace, having seen the hand of Yah begin to move in the prophetic fulfillment of the promise of his forebears. The brothers' request for forgiveness upon their father's death, the brothers became fearful that Joseph will take vengeance for what they did to him, and they seek his forgiveness, saying, now forgive the trespasses of the servants of God, of the God of your fathers. Joseph wept and addressed their fear, speaking kindly toward them and comforting them. Am I in the place of God? Joseph's humility again shines forth in acknowledging that all things come from his hand, and that his commission is to provide for his posterity and theirs, for which reason it was all allowed to take place. Also, in his reply is an acknowledgement that judgment belongs to the Most High and not to man. Joseph sees Ephraim's children to the third generation, and Manasseh's children were also brought up on his knees. In expectation of his passing, he also has them promise to transport his bones by burying them in Canaan when the fulfillment of the prophecy to Abraham takes place and they go up from the land of Egypt. Joseph is embalmed to preserve his body for for the future transportation. When the nation returns to the promised land, he chooses to have his portion in Canaan, the land of Israel, with the great cloud of witnesses that await the resurrection in their inheritance. In 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 3 through 5. Blessed be the Elohim and Father of our Master Yeshua Messiah, who according to his great compassion has caused us to be born again to a living expectation through the resurrection of Yeshua Messiah from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled and unfading, having been kept in the heavens for you, who are protected by the power of Elohim through belief, for a deliverance ready to be revealed in the last time. Think about that, how important that is. In Hebrews 11, 1, trust is being confident in what we hope for, convinced about things that we do not see. By trusting, Joseph, near the end of his life, remembered about the exodus of the people of Israel and gave instructions regarding his bones. These words express the waiting and longing and hope that is our expectation in Messiah. Jacob explained in Genesis 49:18 reflects his longing for Messiah, the true judge of Israel, the true salvation. The Hebrew word translated as wait is kava, a word also translated as hope. Messiah is the hope of Israel. In Acts 28:20, we wait for Yeshua, but we also hope in Yeshua. He is our hope of salvation. The waiting for Messiah is not a passive waiting, as if we are simply passing time at the bus stop, waiting for the bus to arrive. It is our passionate waiting, a deep, heartfelt longing. It is an ache for his coming, for his appearing. To properly await Messiah, our heart needs to break with the anticipation and pine away for him like a young betrothed virgin longs for the return of her fiancé from a foreign land. She is continually scanning the horizon for some sign of his appearing, starting at the sound of every footfall, sighing by day and shedding tears by night. Every day is, in some sense, painful because we are separated from our true love. But at the same time, it is our hope of being united with him that gives us meaning and hope every day. How many has that feeling? Is that the feeling we have waiting for Messiah? That's what we should be anticipating, and we should have that sense that we can't wait, that we're looking for him every day. If we can get that sense about us, then we're going to be definitely postured in the right way to usher in the second coming. So in Isaiah chapter 48, we see Joseph takes his sons to be blessed by Jacob before his death. And let's finish reading 47. And Jacob lived in the land of Mitzrayim 17 years. So the length of Jacob's life was 147 years. And at the time, and the time for Israel to die drew near, and he called his son Joseph and said to him, "Now if I have found favor in your eyes, please put your hand under my thigh and show loving commitment and truth to me. Please do not bury me in Mitzrayim." Now what we said was the putting the hand under the thigh for, because the hand is in direct line with the seed, where the seed comes from. That's why it's put under the thigh. And so he's saying, promise to me and to my people, the seed that's here. So that was every one of the brothers, everybody that was there that came from Jacob, that covenant promise was being made. Now, why did Jacob do this, what we just read? He made it a contract to make sure that Pharaoh couldn't dispute it, that it was on a covenant contract that Joseph made with his father, that he had to carry out these procedures, that he would bury him, not leave him be buried in Mitzrayim. "But I shall lie with my fathers, and you shall take me up out of Mitzrayim and bury me in their burial place. And he said, I do as you have said. So there was the agreement. I do as you have said. And he said, swear to me. And he swore to him. And Israel bowed himself on the head of the bed. In verse 48:1, and after these events, it came to be that it was said to Joseph, see, your father is sick. And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Now notice it's Manasseh first, because Manasseh's the oldest. And Yaakov was told, see, your son Joseph is coming to you. And Israel strengthened himself and sat up on the bed. And Yaakov said to Joseph, El Shaddai appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me and said to me, see, I am making you fruitful and shall increase you and make of you an assembly of people and give this land to your seed after you as an everlasting possession. And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, notice how he says it. He says it, Ephraim and Manasseh. Now there's a correct way to say it. You always say the eldest son first. That's how Joseph was, the writer's explaining this, Manasseh and Ephraim. But he says, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Mitzrayim before I came to you in Mitzrayim, are mine. That's why he's saying that. They're mine. They're like if I would have gave birth to them. Now he compares them to two people. As Reuben and Simeon are mine, your offspring whom you shall bring forth after them are yours, and let them be called by the name of their brothers in their inheritance. And when I came from Padan, Rachel died beside me in the land of Canaan on the way, when there was but a little distance to go to Ephrath. And I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, that is in Beth Lahem. And Israel saw Joseph's son and said, who are these? Think about it. Who are these? And Joseph said to his father, they are my sons whom Elohim has given me in this place. And he said, please bring them to me and let me bless them. And the eyes of Israel were dim with age. Now I want you to notice something, that in this chapter, there's a switch from him being called Yaakov, and now he's called Israel. Because when it comes to the blessing, it's going to refer to him as Israel. It's trying to get us to understand that this is a spot to pay close attention to. Because this is Israel. Now he's going to stand in the stay of his character. The character of his name is going to come out and be seen. The eyes of Israel were dim, and he was unable to see. And he drew them near him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said to Joseph, I had not thought to see your face, but see, Elohim has also shown me your seed. So Joseph brought them from between his knees, and he bowed down his face to the earth. And Joseph took both of them, Ephraim with his right hand toward Israel's left hand. I mean, notice that positioning. And Manasseh with his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near him. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, consciously directing his hand, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, the Elohim before whom my father Abraham and Isaac walked, the Elohim who has fed me all my life long to this day, the messengers who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the youths, and let my name be called upon them, and let the name of my father Abraham and Isaac, and let them increase to a multitude in the midst of the earth. And when Joseph saw that his father had laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it was evil in his eyes. And he took hold of his father's hand and removed it from the head of Ephraim to the head of Manasseh. And Joseph said to his father, "Not so, my father, for this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head." But the father refused and said, "I know, my son, I know. He also becomes a people, and he also is great, and yet his younger brother is greater than he is, and his seed is to become the completeness of the nation." Now that's, we don't realize how powerful those words are, the completeness of the nation. And that's what we see around the world today. We have the completeness of the nation that came from Ephraim. Ephraim's all over the place. In all the nations. In Romans 11:25 says, "For I do not wish you to be ignorant of this secret, brothers, lest you should be wise in your own estimation, that hardness in part has come over Israel until the completeness of the nations has come in. And so all Israel shall be saved, as it has been written, the deliverer shall come out of Zion, and he shall turn away wickedness from Jacob. And this is my covenant with them when I take away their sins." What powerful words that Shaul is speaking here. And we don't get it because we don't understand it in the Torah. So we go through here and we try to figure out, what does that mean, the completeness of the nations? And so we say, oh, that's all the Gentiles are getting saved because that's the church now. And so we completely bypass what the Torah has just explained to us. Out of the very mouth of Jacob, he explains it to us. And we don't connect these two together, but they directly connect it. And it's what we see happening in the world today. The completeness of the nations was never saw in the church as Israel coming back. It was always saw as they're just Gentiles. Never seen as they're coming back. But here, now that you read it this way, it makes all the sense in the world. And so all Israel shall be saved is the next statement. So if we're looking at the completeness of the nations being the Gentile nations, why is he saying, so all Israel shall be saved, as it has been written, the deliverer shall come out of Zion, he shall turn away the wickedness from Jacob. And Isaiah 59:19, "And they shall fear the name of Yah from the west, and his esteem from the rising of the sun, from the west to the east. When distress comes like a flood, the spirit of Yah drives at it." But in the original Hebrew, it's drive in it. The spirit of Yah drives in it. So, it's not against it, it's in it. How many of you know that's a huge difference in understanding? If you're at something, it means you're going against it. But if you're in it, you could be driving it. So the will of God is driving this thing. So let me read it again. "And they shall fear the name of Yah from west, and his esteem from the rising of the sun. When distress comes in like a flood, the spirit of Yah drives in it." Very powerful. The spirit of Yah drives in it. So what we think is the enemy bringing about something, it's really Yah working every detail out and bringing it to pass so Yeshua can finally come and take his seat on the throne of David. And he goes on to the next verse, "And the Redeemer shall come to Zion." Who's the Redeemer that comes to Zion? "And to those turning from transgressions in Jacob declares Yah. What are they turning from? Their transgression of not keeping Torah. So how many thank God that we are living this out right now as we're speaking? We're turning from our transgression and we're returning back to Torah. And so thank God that you and I are living out this very statement that Isaiah spoke. We ought to be so thrilled, and on at least 3-4 times a day we ought to shout hallelujah just because. As for me, this is my covenant with them, says Yah. My spirit that is upon you and my words that I have put in your mouth shall not be withdrawn from your mouth, nor from the mouth of your descendants, nor from the mouth of your descendants' descendants, says Yah, from this time and forever. I don't know about what part we don't get in that, but he's talking about this word is not going to be withdrawn from the mouth. So if it was the word that Abraham had to receive, it was the word that Isaac had to receive, it was the word that Jacob had to receive, and it's the same thing that he handed to Ephraim and Manasseh, that he adopted those two boys, that he changed that word. It's the same word to us today. And what did he say? I'll raise up a prophet from among your brethren, and I'll put my words in his mouth. What words is he putting? The same words he spoke. He never changed it one bit. Y'all don't have to change his words to bring something to pass. It's going to come if we'll just put our faith and trust in it. It's going to happen. Just because we don't see it don't mean it's not happening. And there's a lot of people not seeing it. A lot of people today are not seeing. They have no idea that this is speaking of this. And he's telling us we need to make sure that we keep our eyes on this. My spirit that is upon you and my words that I have put in your mouth shall not be withdrawn from your mouth, nor from the mouth of your descendants, nor from the mouth of your descendants' descendants, says Yah, from this time and forever. What powerful words. In Genesis 48:20, and he blessed them on that day, saying, in you Israel shall bless, saying, Elohim make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh. Thus he put Ephraim before Manasseh. Again, he put him before him. And this is one of the sayings that are said amongst the Jews today, may you be blessed as Ephraim and Manasseh. So when, say they have a gathering, and they're getting ready to go home, and they're given a blessing, they'll bless their children. When they bless their children, they say, may you be blessed as Ephraim and Manasseh. It's a statement that's said among the Jews because they know that this is strong, strong words. If you want to bless your children, may they be blessed as Ephraim and Manasseh. Very important. And this is a value because this blessing, he blessed them on that day saying, in you Israel shall bless, saying, Elohim make you as Ephraim and Manasseh. If Elohim is making you as Ephraim and Manasseh, shouldn't we let those same words come out of our mouth? 1 Chronicles 5, verse number 1. As for the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, he was the firstborn, but because he profaned his father's bed, this is why they're getting passed up. His birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, sons of Israel, so that the genealogist is not listed according to the birthright. Verse 2, and Yehuda prevailed over his brothers, and from him came a ruler, although his birthright was Joseph. And so we see here, this kind of helps us out looking at Israel. So we see here, firstborn Ishmael. And this is the Muslim nation today, the Holy Quran, all comes from this right here. But God chose Isaac over Ishmael. Remember, it's being chosen. God chooses the one that he's going to pass the blessing on to, and it's, we have to be okay if it's his choice. And then we have Jacob and Esau, firstborn again. But God rejects Esau. But Jacob, he loved. God's choice. Let me see a theme here. Then we have all of these, Reuben, Simon, Levi, Zebulun, Issachar, Dan, Gad, Asher, Naphtali, Joseph, and Benjamin. Who was God's choice for this line? Joseph. Through who? Ephraim and Manasseh. Through Ephraim and Manasseh. This is God's choice. And God chose Judah for the priestly line. So Judah's been chosen here. Judah, again, the affair with Tamar, Zerah, and Perez. All this comes into play later on as we go through it. But how many see this right here? So we have Manasseh directly linked to the United States. And Ephraim also is linked here because everyone goes here first. Because Ephraim is the leading bull. Remember the picture of him is the bull? He's the one that drives the plow. He's the one that everybody's following. And they settle here and then they come to the new land. So what a powerful. You gotta take some time just to relax and spend some time looking at this to see how amazing this is. Yitzhak seed seen throughout the nations, leading the prophetic fulfillment, the tribes of Joseph, Ephraim, Manasseh would dominate the world leading up to the end of the age. And that's Genesis 48 and 49 and Deuteronomy chapter 33, verse 13 through 17. In Genesis 22:12, Elohim told Abraham, "In Isaac your seed shall be called." The historical etymology of Isaac leading the Scythians, the Sacons, and finally the Saxons, who were primarily stock of England and later America. All are descendants of Yitzhak. So his name is in every one of those names as far as its root, the root of Yitzhak. And you see it in all of those names. Deuteronomy 28:64, "And Yah shall scatter you among all people from one end of the earth to the other, and there you shall serve other mighty ones, which neither you nor your father have known, wood and stone." Wood and stone. Very important, because what we see happen, he's speaking this, that Ephraim would be scattered everywhere, over all the nations of the world. And your worship, my other mighty ones, which neither you nor your fathers have known. And he speaks of wood. What's the one thing that in the Christian world was focused on when it came to an emblem? What's the one emblem that was focused on? The cross made of wood. So everybody had a cross around their neck. They would all walk around cross, or they have the cross on the steeple. The cross was an image, and everybody bowed and worshiped it. Was it allowed in the Torah? No, it's not allowed. What about the stone? The stone was another thing. So in Mecca, there's this stone that they supposedly found, this black stone, and they all kissed the stone and bowed down and worshiped the stone. So he's saying prophetically this would happen. Did it happen? Absolutely happened. We say, how can somebody prophetically prophesy to be so precise? We're talking about the Most High prophesying through the men that he had raised up. And we see this happen time and time again. So let's look at the commandments just for a moment, brief moment. The Ten Commandments, Exodus 20, verse 1. "And Elohim spoke all these words, saying, I am Yah, your Elohim, who brought you out of the land of Mitzrayim, out of the house of slavery. You have no other mighty ones against my face." No other mighty ones against my face. Who is equal to Yah? Who's face to face with Yah? Think about that. No other mighty ones against my face. "You do not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of that which is in the heaven above, or which is in the earth beneath, or which is in the waters under the earth. No, not even a likeness of any carved image. You do not bow down to them. What is he? Whose them he's talking about? These carved images. The wood or the stone. Don't bow down to them, nor serve them. For I, Yah, your Elohim, am a jealous El, visiting the crookedness of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing loving commitment to thousands to those who love me and guard my commands. I mean, see the difference here. So he gives a clear command not to do it, but he said prophetically they would do it. They worship that of wood and of stone. And Amos 9:9 says, for look, I am commanding, and I shall sift the house of Israel among all the nations as one sifts with the sieve. Not a grain falls to the ground. Notice that. So if he's doing the sifting, he says not a grain falls to the ground. What precision is that? It's amazing. We can put our trust in him. He knows what he's doing. He sifts the nations with the sieve, yet not one grain falls to the ground. And so here we see real interesting chart here. He speaks of those who are going to go to the north and those who are going to go west. And this is what we see. This is Israel here. And all of them started going up, going into Russia and all these, Poland, Romania, going all up into these nations, into the United Kingdom, France. I mean, see all this. Italy, we see all this happening here. This is the ones that he said would go up that way. This is in the dispersion of the northern kingdom. They dispersed all over into these regions. And when they would disperse, they weren't poor and impoverished. They took over. They were rulers. They were kings. Just like the blessing was on their life. He put a blessing on their life. So even when they're dispersing, when he put the blessing on their life, he knew they were going to be in dispersion. He knew that. But the blessing was still on their life, and they reaped the results of that. And so we see this. And in here, this is just an expanded version to show the entire world. All of this came from a little place here. They basically went all in this area and then came to the New World. Let me see that. In Canada, in the United States, in South America. Verse 28:21, and Israel said to Joseph, see, I am dying, but Elohim shall be with you and bring you back to the land of your fathers. It would have been easy for Joseph to say, well, maybe this is where I need to be because look at the position I got. But he said, he's going to bring you back. Now, he's speaking prophetically because Joseph would die and be brought back in a bone box. He would die there, but he would go back. It's prophetic. And I have given to you one portion above your brothers, which I took from the hand of the Amorites with my sword and with my bow. Now we have chapter 49. Yaakov blesses his 12 sons. And we're going to start this in the morning. So this was a good run for us tonight. Amen. So this is where we'll start in the morning.